We are back. Another analyst interview. Today I'm sitting down with David Williams, Grizzlies fan. We're going to talk about the Grizzlies as well as his fantasy journey and life and what's been going on. This is Balls Deep.
I'm the type to get shit done. You're the type to observe. March Madness on my speakers, but today's November 23rd. Cause I'm loud in the blunt, yeah. I don't say what I want, yeah. Probably somewhere sunny in 10. Foreign women in the sun, yeah. That's all that I need. That's all that I need. That's all that I need. Got my brothers with me. Got my brothers with me. And my mama's healthy.
Welcome to the Balls Deep podcast, brought to you by Fantasy Basketball International. I'm Adam King, your host at AdamKing91 on Twitter is where you can find me. Let's bring in my guest. We'll get straight into it. David Williams, host of the Quadruple Double podcast. And as I said, Grizzlies fan, Grizzlies jersey on there. I can't see who it is, but it's a Grizzlies.
It's actually not a Grizzlies jersey.
It's not a Grizzlies jersey. Oh, it's a Pacers jersey. And what number? Pacers jersey, is it?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I didn't lift it
up.
Is it Halliburton? Hallie, yes, sir. Hallie.
Yep. Yeah.
Love basketball. Yeah. Obviously a Grizzlies fan, but I have probably 50 jerseys in my closet of different players that I like. So
it was interesting. Actually, we went to Indiana last year, and their team store, phenomenal, by the way. And we sort of went in and we'd seen all the new city jerseys, so that was one of their new city designs last year. And we'd seen them on TV and online, that sort of thing, and thought, they look okay, but I don't know if I'm in love with them. We got there and actually looked at them in person. These are pretty cool. And I bought two shirts, I think, and I think my friend bought one. And I like them. They grew on me really quickly. That's always nice because you don't always get good jerseys. So it's good to have a nice one. So we'll start at the beginning. How did you get to where you are now? So what's been your journey in terms of basketball, fantasy sports, and how old were you when that started?
The love for sport was early. I remember being, 6-7 years old playing baseball and not so much basketball at that age, but just always wanted to be active. And then I guess around 93, so I was around 9 or 10 years old, and just Jordan and Pippen and the Bulls dynasty just elevated the NBA. And I think back at that time, you either loved Jordan or you hated him, and there was no in between. And so initially, he pulled me into the game, but I learned to hate him just because, not him as a person. I didn't know him.
Yeah.
Just as a fan, a disdain for a certain team. And I fell in love with Charles Barkley. And he was that was my favorite player. He goes to Phoenix and they get to the finals. I'm like, they're beating this Bulls team. And, we all know that did not happen.
Yeah.
So that just increased the disdain. But that's really when it got me. So I guess around 9 or 10 years old, basketball got me. And, there's been kind of ups and downs with it, but it's always been among my favorite sports. And and now I'm just, addicted to it. Can't get enough of it.
And so the transition, I suppose, from watching basketball and loving basketball as a fan to playing fantasy sports, I know a lot of people in the States, from what I've heard from doing these shows, is that their path was often fantasy football into fantasy basketball. Was that the case for you, or was it straight into fantasy basketball? And was that through friends or for me, it was just a group of friends said, do you want to join our fantasy basketball league? And I said, I have no idea what this is, but I'll join. And obviously fell in love quite quickly. So what was that like for you?
Similar to your story, actually, basketball was the first fantasy sport that I played.
Okay.
I have a buddy of mine. He was my first co-host on the Grizzlies podcast. His name is Sam. Sam, I don't know if you listen to this, but love you, man. Appreciate you. Sam was just buried. He didn't watch anything else. Basketball was it for him. Mm-hmm. And he was in a league and he messaged me. He's like, hey, man, I know you love basketball. Would you be interested in doing this? And I'm like, sure. You know what? Why not? And at that time, the amount of fantasy basketball content was very, very hard to find. You had to, you know, go out and hunt it if you wanted it. And now, you know, it's everywhere. And maybe it's just because I've been around it for so long. But Sam invited me to play. And of course, I had no idea. So the first year I get just absolutely thrashed. But I was hooked after that. I played in that league with him for about 3 or 4 years. And in year two, I went from playing just in that league to 5 fantasy leagues in year two. And then that grew. I got as high as probably about 12 or 15 leagues. And then it's too much work. Like you can win. You can win a lot of leagues and you can make money, you know, if you pay attention and you're following the right people. But I just realized it was too much. So I throttled that back, but started with basketball. Done baseball and football, and I still do football, but baseball is too much of a grind, so I stay away from that. But definitely basketball is my primary. Football is one of those things where I have like a family league that I've been in for years with a bunch of guys, and then I usually pick up like one extra one because public fantasy leagues seem like just a cash cow. They're easy to beat. So
And then, so now, I guess if we look to sort of the more recent times, you're sort of more of a dynasty, or not more of a dynasty, but you have a nice dynasty focus in terms of you play dynasty. How is that transition? Because that is a transition that I think more and more people are, at least they're dipping their toe in the water of dynasty. Let's have a look at what this is. And I'm in 3 or 4, I think, dynasty leagues now, and it's completely different. It's a very like obviously the way the scoring or however you, whatever you would call that is the same, but the strategy and the drafting and all of that sort of stuff, very different. So how did that transition happen? And do you have a preference now, a dynasty or redraft?
So I'll start first. You asked me how did it happen, and I've been playing, I think that first league that I got in with Sam was probably somewhere around 20-ish years ago, somewhere in that vicinity. And so I've played redraft forever. And I was always nervous. I knew that I'd done well in the local leagues that I played in and the few public leagues that I got in, but I was nervous about getting into industry leagues. I started kind of following people and I would see guys inviting. And I'm like, man, I don't know if I'm good enough to play against those guys. So, you know, I got the opportunity to do the Grizzlies podcast over at Sports Ethos. Dan reached out, or actually I reached out to Dan after listening to his show. And after going in and getting to know him, he had an opening in one of his leagues and it had some guys that were in the industry. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to challenge myself. I'm going to see how I do against these guys. And I never finished worse than third in that Roto League in the years that I was in it. And this was other industry guys. And I was like, okay, like if I can kick it with them, like I'm good. I don't have anything else to prove. I didn't win the league. Dan beat me. He finished first and I finished second. And then the year that I finished third, I had a ton of injuries. But because there were so many injuries, I worked the wire and was still able to finish third with that. So that gave me a ton of confidence. And I felt like, okay, I wanted to see if I was good enough to play with these guys, and I am. So let's look for a new challenge. And I had Rhett Bauer, I think. Have you interviewed Rhett on the show? Yeah, I think I'm sure you have.
Yeah, I have. Yep.
So Rhett was a dynasty guy with Sports Ethos, and I just kind of started chatting with him about it. And I was reading and listening to his content just to kind of support him. I'm like, you know what? I think I'm going to dive into this because I can go out and get guys that I like, and I can keep them on my roster. I don't have to redraft them every single year.
Yeah.
And I don't have to worry about, okay, I got Jaren Jackson in round 6 this year. Now I have to take him in round 1 because everybody and their brother is on him. So, you know, I just, it was the part of it that really drew me into Dynasty was I could go out and try to get some of my favorite players and keep them year after year. And then I got into it and realized that I had no idea how to do dynasty because, like you say, the scoring is the same, but the strategy is so much different because making a trade in a redraft league has no implications for the future. It's just for that season. And when you're making a trade in a dynasty league, there's so many other things that you have to think about. And I like stuff that stretches me in life, just, you know, stretches what I know and what I've learned. And I felt like dynasty, I still feel like dynasty does that for me because different people value draft picks different. Different people value players different. And so watching and trying to learn the tendencies of guys in your league of, okay, this guy is really tough to trade with because he overvalues everybody that he has. So maybe I want to steer clear of him unless it's somebody that I really, really want.
Yeah.
And then learning how to negotiate so you don't end up on the short end of the stick in a dynasty trade. And there's no guarantee because there may be a guy that you think is top tier A level. And then he gets to year three and he's out of the league because he just didn't have it.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, guys play in the NBL and the NCAA and different leagues overseas and they look really good and then don't pan out in the NBA. And then there's guys that you don't think are going to pan out in the NBA that turn out to be fantastic. So it really, really pushes, like just stretches me as a person. And I like that aspect of it.
Yeah. I like both. I'm still figuring out the whole dynasty trading draft picks, valuing players, that sort of thing. So I'm still getting used to that. I've just started in a keeper. So it's sort of a dynasty league, but it's a keeper league. So you don't keep your whole roster. You basically keep half of your roster. It's an interesting one though. The settings are interesting. So it's the rosters are 20 deep, but all 20 players are active, I believe. So there's no bench spots. It's all active. So, and you keep about half, I think it's 11 at the moment, but it's going to end up being 12. And anyway, it's a league that I've inherited a team and the team is absolute trash. Like it has no one on it and finished last year. There's no way I can get them to be competitive anytime soon. Like this is going to be a multi-year project. There is a draft every season, and but rather than just drafting from the pool of rookies, you're also drafting from the rest of the players that other teams aren't keeping. So I've got the number two pick this year, and I'm looking at, I don't know, trading away some draft picks to get some assets, but then talking to Matt Lawson and Rhett and these dynasty guys about the draft next season, they're saying Cooper Flagg is sort of looking like the real deal. So if it's where do you value, like, because I, in theory, I've got a decent chance at probably getting the number one pick next year. Do I value that pick over, like I've been offered a Desmond Bain, for example?
Yeah.
Do I value, and to me on the surface, it's like, yeah, I'll take Bain. He's good. I know who he is. He's still pretty young. But then talking to dynasty guys, they're like, no, Cooper Flagg looks real. Like he could be a top 15, top 20 dynasty asset, which Bain is not quite in that range. So it's very interesting. There's a lot of, there's a lot to learn when you're doing dynasty. But as you said, it does stretch you and it does challenge you a bit more. So anyone that is watching along, and if you play redraft and you're just thinking about giving dynasty a shot, I think it's worth it. And it makes the fantasy season a full year redraft content sort of drops away a little bit at this time of year. We can still find stuff to talk about, but dynasty now is peak dynasty time with the draft and summer league and training camps and that sort of thing. So it does mean that you have to commit a little bit more. But for me, I mean, and you and us degenerates who do this for a living somewhat, that's fine. So basketball. So obviously, yes, you hosted the Ethos podcast on the Grizzlies, Ethos Grizzlies podcast for a while there. And you're now sort of out doing your own thing with the quadruple double podcast. So I guess what, if we look, take that fantasy journey, how did that end up being turning into something like this where you're doing a regular podcast?
Yeah. So, I told you I was listening to Dan's show.
Yeah.
And he would have like a recruiting call talking about the team coverage on Sports Ethos. And so I get on there and I start looking around, and they did, I think they had, I want to say five podcasts for team coverage at that time. And so I just tweeted at Dan. I'm like, hey, I see that you don't have any Grizzlies coverage. Is that something that's going to be happening pretty soon? And he's like, well, you could do it if you wanted. And I never knew really how to get into the industry. I didn't look into it a whole lot. But I messaged him when he said that. I messaged him back, and I'm like, hey, I'd be interested, you know, in the logistics of how we make that happen and what it consists of. So Dan walked me through what to do to do a demo of the podcast, and he gave me some stuff to work on. So I think I ended up sending him like 3 or 4 demos. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you're ready to go, man. I think after the second one that you were in pretty good shape, we could have posted that one, and it's good enough content that we can grow this thing. And so from there, it was just kind of a grind. You know, we started the podcast, Sam and I started the podcast the year before Ja's rookie year. So that would have been Jaren Jackson Jr.'s rookie year. We started the podcast, and the Grizzlies early in the season, they were good. They were in first place in the West at one point, and then the Wills like fell off. They went into tank mode essentially. Yeah. But it took us around 2.5-3 years to really get any traction with the show. And man, it just, doors started opening. You know, you start reaching out, and one thing that Dan told me, he said, don't be afraid to reach out to guests. The worst thing they can do is either ignore you or tell you no. Yeah. And so I just started shooting for the moon. I started, you know, I would get on Twitter and interact with different people that I knew were beat writers for the Grizzlies. And I had a couple of them on the show, and I ended up like Brevin Knight came on the show with us. Some of the bigger Memphis media guys, we were able to get on the show and interview them. And it just ended up getting me to a point where I became a credentialed media member in Memphis. And then, you know, I get to go to media day, and that's you interview the coaches, the GM, all of the players. You get to be there. And the one thing that you don't see when the players get up on that stage and they're answering those questions, like there's a certain level of professionalism that they have to have. But the behind the scenes stuff, like when you're not on the camera and up on that stage, you get to see true personality from these guys.
Yeah.
And that team was so much fun, still so much fun to cover, because, you know, Ja Morant, and I'll never forget year number 2 that I was credentialed media member, because we got credentialed when COVID was happening. We were jumping on those Zoom calls, asking questions, being involved. Well, year 2, we started being able to go back into the building. And we were interviewing D'Anthony Melton after a morning shoot around. And I feel somebody tapping me on the shoulder, and they're like, hey, ask him why he got lined up. Ask him why he got lined up. Why he got his haircut? Because he had a fresh haircut.
Okay.
And I thought, I think I recognize that voice. And I looked over my left shoulder, and it's Ja Morant standing right there behind me. So as a fan, you want to like fanboy and go crazy, but you know, and as a credentialed media member, you have to remain professional. So it was just an incredible experience, because growing up as a kid and my love for the game, the fact that I'm standing there basically shoulder to shoulder with one of the best players in the game was just something I never dreamed was possible. So it was a crazy journey. It was something Dan sent out a recruiting call, and I'm like, hey, and then it just took off from there. And super, super thankful for Sports Ethos and Dan for helping make that happen.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is surreal. I mean, even just for me, some of the guests I get on is surreal. I can't imagine being on the court or like standing shoulder to shoulder with someone like Ja Morant. I have met a few players in sort of social situations when I've been overseas, but and being down courtside for pregame stuff, but yeah, not to that level. And I would certainly fanboy as well. I think if I've ever in that, it would be hard to not. So away from fantasy. So as you said, credentialed member of the media and Grizzlies. Sort of still doing Grizzlies stuff, but away from the fantasy basketball world and the basketball just in a broader sense, what is it that you do for a living that allows you to do that stuff as a hobby that takes over your life?
Yeah. So I'm a nurse by trade. I work for a hospice company. I'm not familiar. Do you know what hospice is at all? Okay. So my schedule is very, very flexible, and I have a great relationship with my boss.
Okay.
And she understands the, I hate to use the word addiction because I don't want that to be lightly, but she understands how I feel about this stuff.
Yeah.
And she also understands, I guess, kind of maybe gravity is the best, like when you get opportunities like this, they don't come around all the time. Mm-hmm. And she knows that. And because of that, it allows me to be flexible. And I work with not just my boss, but I work with a group of people that we have each other's back. So if you need to be off to go to a doctor's appointment, or if you need to be off because you want to go get your toes and nails done, or your fingers and nails and toes done, whatever you want to be off work for, we will pick up the slack. It's a give and take kind of thing. So the nursing, that's what I do, 5-6 days a week. And then the basketball stuff, I do that in my spare time. And it's really, really great. Having the ability to say, hey, they're having media availability on this day. I need to be in Memphis. Can I have that day off? And I ask, can I have that day off? Knowing that I don't even really have to ask. Yeah. I can just say, hey, I'm going to be off this day. And then my coworkers will pick up my slack.
Yeah.
And it's phenomenal, man. That is, I guess, there are certain things in life I feel like we are kind of called to do. And I think that hospice is one of those things. Either you can do it or you can't. And it's not about skills, but it can be very, it's not a super physical job, but it's extremely mental and emotional.
Yep.
And so I've worked with a lot of great nurses that cannot do hospice. And that's fine. No shame on them, because it takes, like I said, I feel like it's a call, and you have to be called into doing it. And so it's, I'm thankful that I'm called into this. And not only was I called into this, I happened to land in a place that has the best work atmosphere that I've ever been in.
Yeah. Yeah. And allowing you to, as you said, go off when you need to do basketball stuff. I think that sounds amazing. Like, I think you're pretty lucky. You would certainly understand that. So, I guess then moving away from employment altogether, and what does life look like for you? Friends, family, what is a day in your household?
Oh man. So that has changed quite a bit recently. I had a health scare earlier in the year, and I won't bore you guys with all the details, but, I'm 40 years old, which is not super old. And I have I have three kids. I have a daughter that's 4, a stepson that is 16, and then my oldest son is 21. Mm-hmm. We get up and get the 4-year-old off to grandma and grandpa's, and then go to work. But that was kind of my normal. And then after the health scare, I started doing gym stuff. I wanted to get into better shape. I wanted to be healthier. And so right now it's 4:15 a.m. My alarm goes off. Whether I want to get out of the bed or not, I'm rolling out of the bed, getting my stuff, heading to the gym, getting a workout in before work, and then go work 8 to 10 hours a day and come home and do stuff with the family. And, some days it's just the 4-year-old. Some days it's all of us. And whenever it's all of us, I love that, because kids grow up ridiculously fast.
Yeah.
And, that's one thing. My son was 3 months from graduating high school whenever I had my daughter. Mm-hmm. And obviously I don't regret having my son at a young age, but I'm thankful. I'm thankful now, because I'm in a much better place just career wise and life. I understand life at this age. And at 19 years old, when I had my son, I was still learning how to live life. Yeah. So the things that I know are going to go by fast and that I'm going to miss, I'm taking the extra time to spend that time with my daughter so I can be there for first.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a really interesting dynamic because obviously, I mean, if you spoke to, I wouldn't say everyone, but if you, a lot of families, and they're going to have a group of kids who are, I don't know, within 5 years of each other or within 8 years or something like that. No. So having that dynamic of a 21-year-old and a 4-year-old brother and sister is really interesting. And I'm sure for him, quite unique having a 4-year-old sister. And I think really cool. Like I've worked with a lot of families who do have that dynamic of different age kids, and whether that's from different relationships or different marriages or whatever it might be. I just think it's quite unique and lucky to have that. And he can learn from you and you can learn from him, and then she learns from both of you. And I think that's really cool. And then obviously the health stuff, good that you're, as I said off air, you're looking healthy and looking fit, which is great. And if 4:15, man, that's early. So if we were to transition into talking about hobbies, I suppose, but interests, and movies and TV shows are things that I really enjoy doing, and going to the movies. Would you have a lot of time to sit down and watch a movie? Because I'm assuming if you're up at 4:15 in the morning, you're probably in bed not super late. Like I don't go to bed till midnight most nights. You're probably not up till midnight if you're up at 4:15.
Not at all. If I'm up till midnight, something went terribly wrong for me.
Yeah.
So typically like around 9:30 or 10, which is a little bit early, but also, you know, you need sleep. And I can function. I've always been able to function on, you know, if I get a solid 4 hours of sleep, I can power through the day and be good to go. Can't do that consistently throughout the week, but you know, a day or two of 4 hours of sleep, I'm good with that.
Yep.
Yeah. I make sure to take time. You know, my wife and I, we like House of the Dragon.
Okay.
You know, like the Game of Thrones type stuff. So that's a Sunday evening thing. The episodes release Sunday evening. And so we know that Sunday evening at, you know, 7 o'clock, we're going to be locked in watching the newest episode of House of Dragon. And then, actually my stepson, the 16-year-old, he is, as much as the basketball bug has me, movie and that industry has him. He's actually in New York City right now at a film camp. Like a 5-week program where they go and they teach you different things about camera work and working with actors and things like that.
Yeah.
So he comes home Monday.
Right.
And that's what he loves. So, you know, we go, typically it's a weekend thing. Like weeknights are tough. Not that I couldn't do it, but trying to go and watch a movie at 7 p.m. and then get back home and then get up at 4 is going to be rough. But I, you know, it's all about, you have choices to make and there are sacrifices that have to be made. And so to make sure that I spend time with them, I will always sacrifice something for myself to go. But we go, my stepson and I, at least a couple of times a month, we'll go and watch a movie at the theater.
Yeah.
And that we actually, not far from here, it's about an hour and a half drive. They have like a retro theater. And so they'll play like older movies.
Oh, yeah.
We'll watch for stuff that we didn't see in the theater. Like, we want to go see this. And we'll go over there and watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. That's cool that he's at a film camp kind of thing. Because that's not really something they do here. But I know, so over there, your kids at the moment are on their big break. So their big sort of 3 months, I think. Is it 3 months that they get off?
Around there.
Yeah. So whereas here our kids don't get that. They just get smaller breaks every couple of months. So it's set up very differently. So the opportunity to go to something like a 5 or a 6 week camp, that just doesn't happen here really. It's a week program like my son went to an interactive entertainment gaming kind of thing for 2 days. So it was a very short program, but that's really cool. And sleep is important. I agree with that. When was it? 18 months ago, I think I actually started sleeping with a CPAP machine. And the difference has been unbelievable. If I don't have it for a night now and I get up in the morning, I just can't function at all. I have to, I have to have it on now. And I took it to America with me. I take it everywhere with me. An interesting story when I took it to so it comes in a little bag. So it has its own little bag that I can carry the whole thing around in with the plugs and the pipes and everything that I need. And we were at one of the airports. I think it was New Orleans, but I can't remember. And we went to check in, check our bags in, and I put everything on the ground, put my suitcase up on to go through onto the air thing, and I had my backpack on, and I walked off, lined up to go through the scan thing, and I left the CPAP machine at the counter, which not a good move in America or anywhere, but in America, not a good move. And I was in the line, and I thought, oh, crap, I haven't got it. I've left it. And so I went to the line and I said to a lady, I've left a bag at the thing. And she said, okay, just come with me. And we walked over there, cops everywhere. And there was just a bag sitting there with no, and I'm pretty sure it had my name on it. So it did have my details on it, and it had been put through a scan machine and they had to check it. And nothing happened. Like, I didn't get in trouble, anything like that, but they said, try not to leave your bags. And since then, whenever I take it with me, it doesn't leave my body if I don't have to, because yeah, it wasn't fun. So yeah,
that could have ended very badly for you.
I was lucky that it wasn't. I feel like if it had been at LAX or one of these bigger airports, it might have been more of an issue. It was a smaller airport, so they were okay with it. But there were some pretty large men there with their arms folded who didn't look impressed. So not great. A couple of things, I guess. Holidaying, is that something, I mean, it sounds like your schedule is so busy, but is holidaying something that you get to do with the family? And if so, any sort of favorite spots, whether it's in America or outside America?
I can't speak on outside of America. I've actually never ventured outside of America. So Chicago is probably my favorite. Honestly, I love food, and that's been kind of a tough part of my journey, because you know, when you're trying to get healthy, you have to make decisions about what food you're going to eat. But there is such a variety in Chicago, and then I love pizza, and the Chicago style deep dish is the best pizza in the world, in my opinion. I haven't been everywhere, but maybe if I go to Italy and I have pizza there, that I will change my mind. But yeah, I would say Chicago. I love architecture as well, and there are a lot of stories behind some of the buildings there, and just kind of hearing the stories about them and then going and walking around them and like getting to tour them, I really enjoy that aspect. So
yeah,
That would be my favorite. That probably, if you ask my family, the amount of walking that we do when we're in Chicago, they would disagree about that being a favorite, but it's definitely top of the list for me.
And you get to see Bulls stuff, because we know you love the Bulls. So you get to see lots of Bulls stuff. My favorite parts of traveling and going away is the walking. And we went to Europe last year, and obviously I've been to America a couple of times, but I just love walking around new places and just exploring and getting out there. And you walk through some places that you probably shouldn't be walking through, but you head down, you get through them, and you end up somewhere nice. So no, I love the walking, but much like your kids, my kids aren't fans of the walking. Even though they're much like 25 years younger than us. I mean, if I can do it, surely you can do it, but yeah, they don't seem to understand that. And then finally, food. I mean, you've just said pizza, deep dish pizza in Chicago. Is pizza a favorite? Have you got something else that you particularly like?
No. Pizza is definitely up there. I would say chicken and dumplings is probably my favorite meal. And then chicken marsala is something that if I'm going somewhere, I'll always look to see if they have that, because that's a dish. It gets that name, but so many places make that dish differently. And so I always like to go and see, you know, sometimes it's on pasta, sometimes it's on potatoes. I like the variety of that, but probably those three. And then I could list the anything Cajun. So like New Orleans, going down there and getting, you know, like the crawfish and the, you know, authentic Cajun style stuff. I like spice. I don't want it so hot that, you know, it feels like my face is melting off whenever I'm eating it. But yeah, I don't mind a little bit of a kick. And that's, I'm always nervous when people come to the house that, you know, they're going to eat whenever I'm cooking, because my family has kind of adapted their palate to the spicy that I usually cook. Yeah. And then we get people over and they can't eat what we're cooking because it's too hot for them. It's like, it's not really that hot. You need to suck it up. But
Yeah, no, I mean, that's been one of my favorite parts about going to America. It has been the food and the different flavors based on where you are. Like, it's in Australia, you don't get that as much. Wherever you are, food is generally the same. Like, there isn't, it's not like on the East Coast, food is very different to the West Coast. You might get better seafood or something in certain places, but within America, it's wherever you are heading, the food is quite unique to that state or that region. And that's what we found when we went last year and we did New Orleans, Boston, Indiana, even just those three cities, the food was very different. And then Vegas is, I mean, Vegas is its own beast, but we love the food over there. And now I'm going to spend 3 minutes on the Grizzlies, because we have to talk a little bit about the Grizzlies.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I mean, you mentioned when you were growing up that Phoenix, Charles Barkley, and he went to Phoenix. So why Memphis? Is that just because you in Memphis? Is that the reason?
Yeah, it's geography. You know, like that's I was never like, I loved Barkley. Wherever Barkley was playing, that's where I was rooting. And as he kind of was winding down his career, then Kevin Garnett was another guy that I really liked. So I started kind of following Garnett. I never really had a team affiliation in basketball. And then the Grizzlies come to Memphis, and I went to some games whenever I was younger, and I would always kind of root for them just because they're like my local team.
Yeah.
And then I ended up buying season tickets, and I'd go down and I'd watch the guys. I'd watch the Dwayne Wades and the bigger name LeBron James, like watch those guys play. But then when you go to the games where there's not stars, when it's the Grizzlies against the Pelicans, you know, before Zion, like, are the Grizzlies versus the Kings or something like that, then you kind of develop, I did at least, because of my love of the game, a respect for the guys that you're watching night in and night out. Mm. And the atmosphere is great. You know, that's I've been to a number of different arenas, and I don't know that I've been to one where the atmosphere is better than the FedEx Forum when it's a game that matters. And so, you know, it's local. I can go and root for them. And that really, I went from being kind of like a fan of the game and players to now the Grizzlies. That's my team. I like other players. Obviously, I'm wearing the Halliburton jersey today. Yeah. And I told you I have a ton of jerseys in my closet of other players. But I'm going to root for Halliburton unless he's playing the Grizzlies. I'm going to root for guys like Anthony Edwards unless he's playing the Grizzlies. And it really, the first season that I had season tickets down there, Jamichael Green played for the Grizzlies. And he reminded me so much of the Bulls dynasty era of just the grindy, the guys that would do the dirty work. Jamichael Green, he's one of my all-time favorite Grizzlies. And a lot of people, they're like, he's just a role player. Like, he was never elite. Why do you like him so much? And it's because I knew when he got on the floor, he's playing with 100% effort all the time. And I just love guys that play like that.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I think the Grizzlies, like, if you think back 10 years, I want to say when Tony Allen and Marc Gasol and those, the grind, the grit and grind sort of Grizzlies that would win 84 to 81, like those low scoring sort of that was sort of the identity of the Grizzlies. And that's changed since Ja Morant arrived and Jaren Jackson, and they're more free flowing now. Have you seen, like, is that something that was really noticeable from a fan's perspective, that change in persona of the team from basically not, I'm not going to say polar opposites, but they were very defensive focused. And while they're still a good defensive team, their Ja Morant has sort of flipped the way that people perceive that team. Is that something that was really noticeable and accepted by the fans?
Oh yeah, yeah. Memphis is a great city, and they support that team. You know, last year was tough, all the injuries, and you know, you're running basically a G League roster out there, so you see the attendance was down. But the when that team is good, they are there, and like it's a packed house. They're bringing energy, and there are a lot of folks around the area that have a wide knowledge of the game. So understanding of the game is pretty strong in Memphis. And obviously with any fan base, you're going to have those fans that just talk craziness, but you know, I was trying to think, I will tell you, I don't remember the date, but when you realized that there was a shift in it for, or when I realized anyway, it was the first win for the Grizzlies, Ja Morant's rookie year. They were playing the Brooklyn Nets. And I don't know if you remember this game or not, Adam, but at the end of the fourth quarter, this is Kyrie on Brooklyn. Like, this is a good Brooklyn team. Yeah. They were a title contender. They're going to be a favorite, whatever. Ja Morant is guarding Kyrie fourth quarter, last seconds, and Ja Morant blocks Kyrie Irving's shot at the end of the game. And then it goes into overtime, and the Grizzlies end up winning the game. Ja Morant is getting down the floor. He gets downhill, goes to the right in the lane. Jay Crowder's at the top of the key. He kicks the ball back to Jay Crowder because everybody and their brother collapsed on him. Jay Crowder knocks down the three. The Grizzlies win the game. And that was it for me. That's when I realized this is not grit and grind Grizzlies anymore, because this kid, night in and night out, he will do at least one thing every single game that will get you out of your seat. Yeah. And that's not to like Mike Conley, Mark Gasol, Tony Allen, Shane Battier, the Mike Miller, those guys, like the grit and grind guys, Zebo, I can't say anything grit and grind without him. Yeah. Loved watching that basketball, loved those guys and what they were about. But you didn't have that from them. You didn't have the guaranteed highlight play every single night from them. And that, for me, the locking in on defense and blocking Kyrie's shot was something that kind of, okay, this feels like grit and grind. This is something where he's locking in. But the play that he made to get downhill, and you see all of these defenders collapsing on him like that, it's like nobody on that grit and grind team had that kind of gravity on the floor. And so, you know, I love Ja Morant. Jaren, you know, you see this is the Ja Morant on Aaron Bain dunk right here behind me. He's great. Jaren is my favorite player on the team. Mm-hmm. Because I love guys that are two-way players. And that's, you know, he gets a lot of flack from the fan base because he's 7 foot and he doesn't rebound that well. Yeah, I mean, just put guys around him that can. He's not going to be a rebounder. He's never going to be a double-digit rebounder. And that's fine because of everything else that he brings. And I won't, my favorite moment with Jaren, he scored 27 in one quarter against the Bucks. And I'm sure that you've been in an arena where you could just feel the tension and the atmosphere just rising, like the energy. When he made the last three, he let go of the ball. Everybody in that arena knew that it was going in. Like he just wasn't missing. He could have, you know, thrown a rope through the eye of a needle at this point.
Yeah.
And that type of stuff for me, it just doesn't happen everywhere. That feeling that you get from, you know, there's 20,000 people and they're all rooting for the same thing. I guess that's what keeps me so engaged with basketball because I love it so much. So Jaren's my favorite. That was a kind of a weird story. Sorry.
No, stories are good.
Yeah.
And just so in that game you referenced against Brooklyn, I just pulled it up. So Ja Morant had 30 points 9 assists, 4 rebounds, a steal, a block, a 3-pointer. So pretty good game for his third game in the NBA. So as you, and then just quickly, you referenced last season was a rough one for the Grizzlies with all the injuries. And but if we wanted to look at blessing in disguise or something like that, those young guys that were given minutes, notably Gigi Jackson, Vince Williams, Scottie Pippen to some degree as well. What do you think, like this season, we're assuming they're healthy. So I guess probably two parts to this question. What does their role look like, these guys? They've been playing in Summer League and dominating, which they should. Given they've basically played a full year of NBA. What's their role look like? And the other question I have is, what does the center spot look like for Memphis this year? Because Steven Adams is not there. He's one of my favorite players, by the way, Steven Adams. So, and I'm sure...
Love covering Memphis him as a media. Go ahead with the second part of your question.
That's the question, I guess. What is the role of these young guys? And then what does that center spot look like now that Steven Adams is not there? And as you said, Jaren Jackson is not an elite rebounder. So they need to put players around him that can rebound. And Ja Morant is a good rebounder from the guard position. But what does that center spot look like now? Is it Misi who gets a good look there?
He's in New Orleans, so he's not going to get any playing time from Memphis.
No, I don't know why. No, he probably
you're okay. I'm just giving you a hard time. So, Steven Adams, before I move on to the questions, there were a lot of people that despised him, but before he came to Memphis, and when they made that trade, there were a lot of people that were up in arms, like, I can't believe they brought him. And then his personality, man, the way that he jokes my buddy Sean Coleman, he has a very deep Southern accent.
Yep.
And during the 2020 season, or maybe it's 21, I can't remember, when we were doing the Zoom interviews, Sean was asking Steven Adams a question, and Adams didn't even answer the question. He's like, mate, where are you from? I love your accent. And it was just, to me, that was an iconic moment in the season because of him. You know, we know Sean, and we know that that's him, but just Adams kind of calling him out, that's his personality. Like that's what he does.
Yeah.
So the playing time for the younger guys, Gigi Jackson is going to get minutes. Last year, had the injuries not happened, he would have been buried in the G League the whole season, which he was 19 years old. He needed to develop. So to say that I'm thankful for the injuries last year is kind of rough, because the expectations after going out and getting a guy like Marcus Smart, you think that you're going to be competing, you know, trying to make a deep playoff run. But I am. I'm so thankful for it, because we got to see Vince Williams Jr. and we got to see he's an elite wing defender and he can knock down the three. And he also has playmaking abilities that we saw that in college with him. We didn't know if that was going to translate at this level, and it did last year. And then Gigi, there were a ton of questions about, you know, he ended up going in the second round to the Grizzlies because there were questions about his motor and different stuff like that. And then to watch him, I feel like he's an all-star type player, Adam. I really do. I think that right now, heading into this season, I feel like they're not going to be, but I feel like there are four players on this roster that are all-star caliber players. And then you have Marcus Smart, who has been an all-star, who may or may not be at that level. So 4 to 5 players that could be an all-star. I feel like those guys are going to have a role. You know, they're making moves with the roster. You see that they traded Zaire Williams, kind of moved him out. The emergence of those two guys kind of signed his shipping papers and his inability to improve at this point in his career. But I think they're definitely going to have a role. I think it's going to be somewhere in the 20 to 25 minute range for Vince Williams and Gigi Jackson, barring any injuries. And then as far as the center position, Zach Edey, I think, is day one starter. I mean. I know that's who you meant. I just, when you said Misi, I'm like, wait a minute, this isn't the Pelicans. No. I think he's day one starter. I was not a huge fan of that pick. I don't know. My concern is this. Number one, I let me back up, because I don't want to be all negative. He's not going to have a problem scoring because he's massive. He's just a massive man. He's got a massive reach. So he's going to be able to score over the top of the people. So he's going to score. He's going to get rebounds. He's going to be able to set screens, which is going to help the Grizzlies' offense, which is an issue. The half-court offense is the reason that this team has not made it past the second round of the playoffs. Yeah. But my biggest concern about Zach Edey is his agility. Can he move his feet well enough to stay on the floor when it's late? If you go back to that Warriors series, Grizzlies versus Warriors in the playoffs, the Warriors were targeting Brandon Clark. When Brandon Clark was on the floor, they were bringing his man out to screen for Klay Thompson or to screen for Steph Curry and getting them in on ISO situation with Brandon Clark. And Brandon Clark is not slow, but he's also not super fleet. Like, I'm losing my words here. He's not fleet of foot. Like, he doesn't move all that well. And so that's my concern, like, in the playoffs when it matters, because I don't give a flying flip about the regular season.
Yeah,
I'm like, it's championship for me. That, like, that as a Grizzlies fan, as an analyst, that's what I want to see. But can Zach Edey stay on the floor?
Yeah.
The minutes from the center position, they're going to be split between him and Brandon Clark. And you can say Brandon's the four or the five, Jaren's the four or the five, but that's going to be your center rotation. I would love to see them go out and get a veteran guy. I don't know. I would have to look to see who is available, but I would love to see them go out and get another veteran big that is capable of coming in and playing productive minutes. Just because if you want to be a true contender, I don't think banking on a rookie having that kind of production in the playoffs is something that you can do. It has happened in the past, but it doesn't happen frequently. Hmm. So I just don't expect them to go out and make a move like that. They freed up a spot on the roster moving Zaire. I expect that they re-sign Luke Kennard to a team-friendly deal with that, because there have been talks about that happening. But if they don't sign Luke Kennard, if they go out and get a big, it would make me happy, because I don't know that Luke Kennard is a real playoff rotation player anyway.
Yeah, potentially not. And as you said, in the playoffs, that is where teams really target other teams' weaknesses. And at the moment, that probably is a bit of a hole for the Grizzlies, is having that center who can guard laterally and switch out and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they – I mean – as you said, they're going to start with Edey and see how it goes, and get a good look at what that looks like. And maybe it's then at around that All-Star break when some veterans become available and waived and buyouts and all that sort of thing, they may bring someone in. So we'll see. But so for the Grizzlies this year, obviously they're looking to bounce back after last season. But meanwhile, the West has gotten better. So other teams have improved and that sort of thing. So Grizzlies, I mean, realistically, do you think they can make the top four in the West?
Yeah. I believe that this team is good enough to make top four. I think people forgot how good this core was prior to all of the injuries. You know, you have Jaren Jackson, Ja Morant, and Desmond Bain. That, you know, the first two have been all-stars, and Desmond Bane, I think, is just kind of knocking on that door. I think it's only a matter of time before he kind of gets over that hump. And then you add, you know, a defensive player of the year in Marcus Smart, and there's a lot of conversation about should they start him or start somebody else. Yeah. And that's like mostly fan-based stuff. But, you know, we didn't get to see what that looks like. We have no idea what that looks like. And if nothing else, having Jaren Jackson Jr. on the floor with Marcus Smart, that defense was one of the best defenses. They were one of the best defenses in the league with Dylan Brooks as your primary wing defender. And Marcus Smart is an upgrade. Mm. So, you know, like, that defense is still going to be scary. Desmond Bain, you know, he's short-armed, but he defends well. Like, he's not an elite defender, but he's better than serviceable.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, and then Ja Morant, I think that's where I want to see his growth. You know, he's definitely not an elite defender. I think he's more around the serviceable range, maybe slightly below serviceable. But when he locks in on the defensive end, he's capable. And so defensively, I think they're going to be good. The moves that they made, And Adam, I'm sorry, I didn't look it up, but the new coaching hire that the guy that they brought over, he was coaching in Paris, I believe, and won like a EuroLeague championship or something of that nature. I think that that's going to be great. They want to make this half court offense better, and the guys that they went out to get, they do. GG Jackson in college was a phenomenal ISO scorer that helps you in your half court offense. Zach Edey is a guy that, you know, he can pass the ball well. I think that's one of like his more underrated skill sets is being able to pass out of double teams. And so that helps your half court offense. So that they went and made moves to make this half court offense better. And I really think with what they had and what they've added, and one thing that is invaluable is experience. And without those injuries, Vince Williams doesn't get the run that he gets. Gigi doesn't get the run that he gets. And so that year of experience for those two guys, I think that that's the kind of stuff that gets teams over the hump. And maybe it's not championship this year, but it wouldn't shock me if they were there. You know, we get to the end of the season that they're one of the teams, one of the final four teams standing and make a run, maybe even as far as the finals.
Yeah, no, time will tell. And they're certainly going to be in that discussion, I think, given their, as you said, their roster. And they've proven they can do it in the past. They, 2 years ago, they were right there. So I'm going to let you jump out. I've kept you long enough, and I'm sure you've got plenty to do, as we know. So where can people find you? Where can they find like your show and what's sort of coming up for the next few months in the lead up to the season?
Sure. Yeah. So my show is not NBA related at all at this point. I got the opportunity to do color commentary in the NCAA for Division I team, University of Tennessee at Martin. And that has kind of opened a door into the OVC. So I'm covering that conference. That's anywhere that you can get podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, iHeart, all of that stuff.
Yep.
And then Twitter is the best place. That's usually where I'm doing the most gabbing at NBADWill21.
All right. So yeah, go and follow David and listening to his podcast. It's been good. Look, I'm probably going to get you on at some point in maybe September to talk about Grizzlies. We'll just do a Grizzlies show because I think we could talk about the Grizzlies a lot more. And they're going to be a team that people want to know what's happening, given last year was sort of an anomaly. Well, we hope it was an anomaly in terms of injuries and the suspension, obviously. So, yeah, hopefully a much better season coming up, and we'll talk about those rotations and things like that. So thanks for squeezing me in and jumping on the show. Nice to catch up again. It's been a little while, but, yeah, we'll have you on again soon. In terms of our show, follow us, like and subscribe on YouTube. Help us to build our brand as well. Head over to Discord. Draft-only leagues are running as we speak. This will be released a bit later, but they're already running, so they will be running then. And until next time, catch up.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.